Well, folks, it's once again time for another edition of Valley Edition. And looking at the almost completed studio before me, we see Terry Snyder, Zaz Hollander, and Brian O'Connor, wanted to say his name correctly, sitting in for Mark Kelsey. Mark obviously made a careful selection to have someone sit in his seat. Welcome, Brian.
Well, thank you. I think I was just the guy that he did a 180, and I was just the guy standing there. So.
Now you know.
Well, this may be the last week where the legislature acts down in Juneau until adjourning on the 19th. Terry, you've been following activities there. Tell us what you know.
The legislature, I'm still hung up on the legislator stops. You might have gotten a memo I didn't get. I don't think anybody knows that. There are some that are speculating they'll adjourn on time and come back in October and take on a couple of issues. There are some that say they're just going to keep going. By the tone of what I'm seeing on Gavel, Alaska, they got a lot to do and they've got a lot to talk about. It'd be very interesting to see how they're going to wrap it up in 2 weeks. And I don't think at this point anybody knows, but maybe the powers that be that make those decisions.
Well, something that just popped into my head is around the question of what can we do to help the legislators? We often go to the legislature seeking help. Saz, what do you think?
What could we possibly do, Mike? I don't know. I'm still intrigued by the new credits now that Chenault is proposing for Nick. There's new things still coming up, and big things have yet to be resolved. So I still think the one thing we could do to help the legislature would be to insist on a whiteboard so they can keep track of all their budgets, ins and outs. It's just a big whiteboard that they all get to use. Everybody gets different colored markers.
Well, do you think there's maybe a secret blackboard in the basement where all this is written out?
I think it's more likely it's a dartboard.
Well, we will return to the legislature, but let's focus a little bit on a more concrete action taken at the borough assembly level. And this involved a reach out from the assembly to the legislature, and it began startlingly with a resolution proposal by Assemblyperson Matthew Beck. What did you hear happen there, Terry?
Well, yeah, I didn't see that exactly coming either. I think it kind of took everybody by surprise. What Mr. Beck did was, during the early part of the meeting, make a motion to have the assembly support a writing of a letter to the legislature, the Valley delegation particularly, letting them know that the assembly was in support of Medicaid expansion. Mr. Beck had said he had gotten a letter from they had just all gotten a letter that briefly that day got a chance to look at a letter from Governor Walker, and he felt that it was very well reasoned, and he thought they should come out in front and support this. I mean, a poll shows that 2-1 in the state, ADN just reported, do support Medicaid expansion. So it's not much of a stretch, but for this assembly to take a position that quickly on something, kind of a stretch. Not a lot of discussion about it, actually. I was sort of surprised. Mr. Arvin didn't speak up at all. But Mr. Colligan did object, and at the end of the day, they voted, and it was 4-2, and the letter has been sent, I'm told.
And Dr. Doty wasn't even there.
And Dr. Doty wasn't there, which we don't know because she had an excused absence, but from her remarks so far, I think she would support it. Most of the physicians in the hospitals mm-hmm. do support it, so it would be unlikely she wouldn't support it. So perhaps that was it. The mayor didn't have much to say about it. He talked a little bit about a presentation at the Wasilla Chamber with some, you know, questions about reform costs or something, you know, sort
recruiting.
Of the rhetoric
we need to
we've
recruit
been
more surgeons up here.
Which, you know, Brent someone
said that would be a plus.
That should be kind of a good thing if we got more surgeons up here. So,
although that has been a real serious issue here, is recruiting good providers who stick around.
Well, paying them would be helpful.
Yes, pay is always helpful.
Pay is helpful. And hopefully that, from the sounds of the reports that I'm hearing in the hearings today, that's been worked on very rapidly since this new administration has taken over, and they've fixed a lot of those little things. So anybody else listen to that podcast?
Yep. I was also the next day, or maybe yesterday, there's a little bit of feedback from the Alaska Republicans who are, I think, shocked and concerned that the Mat-Su, borough level is coming out in favor of expansion. And there was some discussion of a conversation with, I think it was Tilton, who reaffirmed the Mat-Su caucus's opposition. to expansion.
Hmm.
And Terry, you've had a chance to watch the most recent discussion on this whole issue. Would you say that there is progress being made?
Well, you know, there's hearings being had. I don't know if progress is kind of a strong word. They are parading a lot of people in. I just watched this morning House Finance interview Becky Holberg, who is, represents all the big hospitals. They heard from Peninsula Hospital yesterday in Kenai, and they apparently have some slated the bigger hospitals who already come out in support. And I'm not sure they're getting the answers that they want for the questions they're forming. But, you know, there are certainly lots of information being put out there, and the public seems to be engaged. So
have you seen or heard any significant testimony that is against expansion of Medicaid?
I think there's been some public hearings. I haven't listened to all of them, but I know they're getting they are getting some feedback. Part of it, I think, is misinformation. There's a lot of people that just don't understand. I mean, particularly the fact that it's Medicaid insurance, and a lot of people have paid into this fund their entire life, and now they might find themselves not being able to make ends meet or not having health care, and they're aced out of this. So there's a lot of misinformation. I think what I've heard of public testimony, it's been either a soundbite that someone's been given, or it's just misinformation about confusion in the program. And it's not a simple program. And I think most minds, one thing they all agree on, is it needs significant reforms. And I think they're trying to do that hand in hand. Have okay. I missed anything, Brian?
No, that's most of the people I've spoken to on the subject seem to have the same opinion. Basically, a lot of the opposition just kind of seems to be more along the lines of concern about reform and the Xerox implementation, which did not go well.
But seems to be doing better by all accounts.
Yeah, that's the general timeline I'd heard, is that some of the issues that we had reported on there are slowly turning around. So that's like the Medicaid issue, I guess. The real concern is, can you do reform at the same time that you do expansion, or do you need to do these as two separate moves? And there's a lot of concern from legislators and staff members and people in the medical profession about whether that's possible. So,
would you say that this is possibly parallel to the concern about cutting the budget and increasing income at the same time?
You're talking about revenue income for
yes.
the budget? I hadn't heard anything tying those two together. More along the lines of, we have a system that we strongly suspect or have very serious reservations about that is broken, and or that's the word that I keep hearing, it is broken, there are problems. And we don't know that expanding a broken system is necessarily going to be the best idea.
Well, okay. I think you could probably say that about budgets. Budgets are forecasts. You know, and they're not always right. I mean, even the forecasts that the state revenue office made last year are wrong. Nobody thought the price of oil would dip this quick, this fast. So it is all a numbers game, and it is hard to do side by side. But, you know, we don't ask the question when we build a building, what's the maintenance going to be for 20 years? That conversation is never had. But this seems to me sort of just completely opposite of that. They want to pick apart the details. They already have somebody in place who's already making significant changes and significant progress in the system that they are all trying to reforming, and it doesn't seem to be a lot of confidence from that side that it can only get better.
Well, let's look at the broader picture of the budget situation for the state of Alaska. There have been two recent commentators, respectable people, Tim Bradner, Scott Goldsmith, who have both suggested there are ways to take care of this. Scott Goldsmith most recently talking about you can do it, and this is how. Tim Bradner raising a concern. Do you think the legislature is listening to these two people or anyone else of their ilk?
Well, I mean, they're certainly both credible, tend to be voices from different sides of the budget spectrum.
Okay. I'm just wondering, is politics at work?
Always. Always. I mean, there is ideology at heavy play here. There's politics there's political careers hatching and, you know, dwindling. There's all that going on during legislative session. You know, there is an overload of information right now. It's just that finally action is taking place. And so You're getting the noise and you're getting people doing things, and that just adds to the confusion.
Well, there was one legislator who broke away from a caucus, the majority caucus. Do you have any sense that there might be a second or a third that would do that? Or are we faced with basically the same kind of block approach to making decisions?
I don't know, but I doubt that will happen this session.
Yeah, I agree. This is a little out of my realm of reporting, but I get the sense that the caucus in charge comes down hard on dissent, and it doesn't seem like the session to be dissenting.
Okay, well, let's turn our focus closer. One of the special meeting that happened with the Borough Assembly recently dealt with the next steps in creating a new city. Big Lake is a new city. Now, Brian, you have covered a topic in the city of Wasilla that has to do with ATV regulations. Is it possible that as Big Lake, that open ground, is becoming more citified, Wasilla is... What's happening in Wasilla?
The bottom line is that the ATV task force was formed in January, and they came back and said, no ban. We can have responsible use. And they laid out some safety regulations. They laid out one or two law enforcement regulations. But as this relates to Big Lake, a lot of the Big Lake people that I've spoken with, the people that are pushing for incorporation, they've been painfully clear about things like law enforcement duty and other things like that, is that they don't see that as in the pipes right now. Right now, they're more concerned about getting a voice and establishing kind of a local municipal identity as that area out there continues to just explode. Road powers as well. Maintenance, I think, was their primary concern. When I put it to them that this is an opportunity to not have Alaska State Troopers do law enforcement or other things, what do you think about that? Most of the proponents of incorporation were like, we don't really even think about that for the moment right now.
Okay.
So I don't know. The incorporation and ATV, they're not really – I don't know how you relate those two issues.
I think your story, Brian, was very good, and you had a great quote from somebody on the committee saying, what is it, you know, your punch in the nose and the –
Yeah, you're right to swing your arm ends right, at the stops at the end of my nose, and the noses are getting closer together.
Great quote.
Is just a great.
It just sums it up. I mean, Wasilla is you know, if there is a city of Big Lake, it's, you know, Wasilla is years and years and years ahead. And you know, as Brian's a lot of the comments Brian's story points out, Wasilla has gotten too crowded for especially downtown use of ATVs. Is what even this group that I think was viewed with a lot of credibility. Don't you, Brian?
Among ATV users, yeah, it seems like a lot of the people that were held up as spokespeople for the pro ATV, I don't know if you could call it a lobby or group of people that came out and spoke in front of the Wasilla City Council. They, a lot of these guys had representatives there or had faces on that board. So, and the mayor and everybody else in Wasilla, they've continually made the point that, yes, this is, you know, we've had representatives from industry. We're trying to be as inclusive as possible in this issue. So,
and pretty fast-moving recommendations for, you know, you see the arguably unwieldy borough marijuana advisory group, and how are all those people? And, you know, here's Wasilla, in January they form, and by April they've got recommendations.
Well, Wasilla does seem to be able to move along and do things, and, of course, they have jumped into something when they passed the first set of marijuana guidelines, and then they backed up and jumped again. Where would you say they are? Where is the city of Wasilla, Brian, with marijuana use?
I think for now the issue's hit kind of a stasis. There is one agenda item for the next upcoming city council meeting, and they're basically changing around the schedule for the fines. And Zaz, you know, the agenda's a little bit probably as well as I do. So.
Well, I mean, I think that stasis is a good word for it. And they're still trying to get out ahead of whatever the state does, more so than I think almost any other municipality. They're putting their own stamp with a lot of conflict on the inside, you know, among council members. Some of the more longer-term council members going up against Stu Graham, the new one who proposed the original. And so, but no, I think for now it's stasis. And well, the state remains to be seen what happens there, if anything.
And,
Amazing.
And the clock is ticking.
Amazing.
Right.
Yeah.
It is ticking, and the state has these other topics of Medicaid and the budget and so on to
gas line.
Gas pipeline. Oh, I almost forgot that.
Smoke-free workplaces.
Oh, yes, those things.
Terry always reminds us of that.
Yeah.
But I'm beginning to think that these issues are very, very complex. And your comment earlier about having something that would show the complexity, a whiteboard, just sketch out from in a summary fashion how all these pieces go together so people would be helped. That would be a very good thing. I'm taken to an article recently in the Alaska Dispatch News that asked the question about what happens if you happen to be driving and somewhere in the past, a month ago, a passenger, whatever, there was marijuana smoke around you. How would it be determined whether you were under the influence? And I thought it was a fascinating discussion because so much of this has gone along to say, let us treat this as alcohol. Well, alcohol works pretty well. We know what is too much in your blood, et cetera. But when it came to marijuana, it was another question entirely. And apparently the technology has not caught up with things.
Kind of shocking.
This is kind of an interesting thing because people would have said, well, has marijuana been around for a long time, even if illegal? And I think the answer is yes. But the reality is until these laws have come along, there probably hasn't been the kind of incentive determine whether you're under the influence or not. So there is some suggestion that entrepreneurs are out there saying, if you want to make a bunch of money, yes, you can grow this stuff, but if you come up with technology that will allow for the determination, both as an individual who's saying, okay, I want to check and see where I am before I get behind the wheel, or someone who's given that responsibility of ensuring that someone is not under the influence or is, there we go. So that's a background piece. So I can see legislators who are looking at this saying, we thought this was going to be easy. You go with the ABC board. Well, how does that work?
Well, maybe next session we'll see a bill for marijuana testing kits in bathrooms.
Oh, Terry.
There is a parallel.
You know, and there's a point to be made here along that line is that alcohol and cars existed on the road for about 5 decades before you had a commercial breathalyzer test to test them.
Right.
I can't remember the exact date, but I think it was the late 50s, early 60s. So there's precedent in American history for this kind of epoch of we're out there with marijuana and cars and things that mix and we don't know how to do them well together. And I think that's kind of where we go from here is if you create the market demand, it wasn't until the 50s and 60s, remember, that cars got so pervasive in American society, then you get to that point and all of a sudden you have a demand for a breathalyzer and a breathalyzer showed up and was used. So,
but they must have the data on how many people they've arrested under the influence of marijuana that have led to accidents. And it doesn't sound like...
Well, just a moment there. My reading of this was that's part of the problem. The part of the problem is not having that specific data to have any sense of what it was that this person had been involved with and what has happened to the person. Apparently, it's not as easy to say X amount done this amount of time will produce this effect on you.
Well, I concede that, but I also think there's probably in police records somewhere that people have been arrested having the smell of marijuana on them, having the marijuana in the car. Maybe they've even been arrested from smoking it in front of the police officer. But there's some data, whether it's enough to really make decisions on, you know, where that bar is. And it doesn't really matter without the technology. I think Brian's hit the nail on the head. You have to show the capacity for somebody to make money on the deal.
Mm-hmm.
And then you will see it come up here.
Well, let's take a nod to our city to the south, Anchorage, which has recently had an election. And from that election, 11 people running for mayor. Two emerged, Ethan Berkowitz and Amy Domboski. And they apparently in less than a month are going to go head-to-head. In the meantime, they've begun discussion about things. And one that popped up that would not have been one I would have thought would have been the center point of their difference was their attitude toward bicyclists. And I found, I somehow, I said, well, okay, maybe that's a proper term. It turns out that Ethan is saying yes, he would support increasing the ability of those people who would like to ride a bike in Anchorage to have safe places to ride, from place to place, for work, whatever. And Amy said, not so much. What do you think?
It's one of those, we look at what our beacons of ideology, you know, your view on abortion, fiscal conservative, social issues, bikes. Apparently it's a new barometer of where people stand on issue. I mean, it's an easy way to get into the differences between the two candidates.
Well, that's why I chose it.
Yeah. Well, that's why we chose it, apparently.
Yes.
But it also speaks to people that want to plan what's happening in other major cities, that where bikes are becoming a mainstay, where climates are getting open to being able to ride a bike all year, which certainly seems like ours after this year, and making accommodations for them now, or tearing up roadways and making accommodations for them later, like every big other. But if you don't want to approach that subject, it's an easy one to paint the other side as being liberal or you know, some other term that's used that week.
Okay. Well, we're almost out of time. And so the last topic, suitably, should be about time. There had been a major push to get rid of that time change that people have to deal with, daylight savings time. And it was going pretty quickly. And then it stopped, and apparently there will not be an action, so fear not. At least in the foreseeable future, we're not going to have that change, if that's something that bothered you. Some people wanted to see it, some people didn't want to see it. What do you think about that? Let's just a quick sense. Are you in favor of eliminating daylight savings time in the state of Alaska? Zaz.
I could see it go away and be happy. But, I mean, the political ramifications here, and maybe the more interesting than my opinion, is things changed when industry got involved in this debate. And
So
my opinion, Mike, it doesn't matter.
Because someone else. All right. Brian.
Does it mean I get to sleep in an extra hour? I don't know. It's exciting to be here for daylight savings time. I'm from Wisconsin originally, and it's like Tuesday there. You know, nobody cares. Here, daylight savings time happens in the spring, and all of a sudden, like, it's suddenly awesome to live in Alaska. Like, the daylight is suddenly... So there's, like, an argument for it. I guess, I don't know. I don't have a stock portfolio and don't ever hope to. So I don't know if my business concern really matters. So,
Terry.
Well, I'm reminded when this bill came up before, and this is when Senator McKinnon was Representative McKinnon. I think it may have been one of her junior bills, actually. And it didn't get any tread at all. In fact, I think she was sort of patted on the head and told to go home and wait till it happens federally. I kind of think that's where we're going to end up after the next session. Why did it go fast in the Senate? Well, it might be a coincidence that Senator McKinnon is the head of finance. Things have a way of getting through quickly that way. But we're seeing a lot of things that get through fast on one side, not on the other. But it's not going away. It is just going to rest until the next session. A lot of those things, a lot of the bills you brought up earlier that are big things that are being rolled out right now, have no expectation of going through this year. They need 2 years, or they need to be shoved back fast through in one last session to do things before, an election. So the timing is very big deal in Juneau, and this one will have its time, I suspect.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And timing is upon us here. We're about done. I want to thank Terry Snyder, Brian O'Connor, and Zaz Hollander for coming in on this beautiful day, stepping in out of the sunshine, and sharing their perspectives on the world about us in the Valley. See you next time.